This week I've gone somewhere as quiet as possible away from all the news. Because if I'm honest, watching all the news this week, and particularly people's reactions, has kind of made me want to sit outside in the middle of nowhere. Kind of in the middle of nowhere. This is the back of my house. This is where I normally sit each morning and have a coffee and try and catch up with things. And it's just a really nice, peaceful spot. So I thought I'd come down here. It's about 5:30 in the morning. I normally get up pretty early these days because I just find I get a lot more done in the morning. And the sun's just coming up, which is kind of nice. And yeah, this is like as peaceful a way as possible I can start my day. But anyway, moving on to other things of interest. First of all, this picture should look awesome, not just because it is an awesome scene, but because I did go and get an iPhone 7. Now, a couple of episodes ago, maybe last episode, I talked about taking my iPhone in to Apple because it had a dodgy speaker and I wanted to get it fixed. And they were like, yeah, you just unlock it, we'll take it into the back room and have our way with your phone. And I was like, nah, not happening. Thought, I'll wait, I'll get the 7, and then I can take the other one in after I wipe it and they can have it. So I did go and get it. And one of the reasons I really wanted to have that 7 is it's got 1080p camera on the front now. So before it was 720, I reckon it looked all right, it was 720. But basically it means my picture quality is better and I've got to wait even longer on our dodgy Australian bandwidth to upload it. Hence, doing this at 5:30, I should have time. So anyway, so what do you think of the quality? I hope it comes out really well. It looks awesome from what I'm looking at, but again, it's kind of like the light and the scene. Should be good. Now, a few other things this week. A lot of people have been talking to me about Tesco Bank, and I guess there's two angles there of involvement for me. So one is it's a security thing. It's a big story in the UK. Tesco Bank has had an issue where allegedly about 20,000 customers have lost money out of their accounts, which is not good. That's a large number, and it's a much larger number than what we'd see from like a phishing attack or something like that. So there's that. And the other reason I'm in the sort of Tesco news is that some years ago I wrote a piece that got a lot of media about Tesco security problems. And at the time, this was about the Tesco shopping centre. So for folks that are not from the UK, Tesco is a really major brand of grocery store. They've got stores absolutely everywhere, multi-billion pound organisation. And they just had these egregiously stupid security vulnerabilities. It was stuff like HTTPS was missing from a bunch of places, there was mixed mode, there were plain text credentials, and a lot of it began because of this crazy tweet from Tesco that I still use in a lot of my presentations. Something along the lines of passwords are secure, they're only copied into plain text automatically when something something. It was just a really weird tweet. I'll link to that in the show notes because it's kind of funny. However, getting back to Tesco Bank, I honestly don't think there's much crossover between Tesco as a grocery chain and Tesco as a bank. So the dots that the journos have been trying to draw is sometimes we get really big splashes here as well and you're just not quite sure what it is. Anyway, so the dots the journos want to try and draw is, look, did Tesco have all of these bad security flaws that were sort of ingrained within the organisation that I pointed out years ago, and now they're sort of exposing themselves by way of people getting their bank accounts owned? I don't have anything to suggest that there is a correlation between that. I know it's a good headline, but as far as I know, they're very separate entities. As for how a bank has tens of thousands of customers all lose money at the same time, that's really interesting. So I said, look, I don't think it's going to be a phishing-style attack, simply because that's the sort of thing that tends to be a bit more of a drip feed, where there'll be campaigns of emails being sent, obviously phishing pages collecting personal info, accounts getting owned in a bit of a trickle. This seems to be a lot of them in one go, which points more to some sort of fundamental flaw somewhere in the application, perhaps on Tesco's side, perhaps if they've got any upstream or downstream providers that integrate into their systems. It seems more like someone's managed to find a vulnerability and they've just found the exploit, gone yoink, let's just grab a bunch of cash from a bunch of accounts in one go. I don't think this is any sort of trickle effect. So we'll see. Hopefully they will be forthcoming with details and we'll actually see a bit of info later on. Banks tend to like being a little bit private about how much stuff they share around vulnerabilities, but hopefully once they're on top of it we might hear some info. So that's Tesco. Another thing You may have noticed, if you've been watching this week, is I've loaded a lot of data into Have I Been Pwned. There is a huge amount of content that I have sitting there just waiting to be processed. And this is content that people just pop up and go, hey, we've got some data for you. In fact, in October, I had probably about 100 different instances of individual alleged data breaches that are just sitting there waiting for me to go through them. So I've started working back through that now that I've got a bit of time at home. It is laborious work, mostly in the verification, making sure stuff is legit. And I'm sort of starting with the biggest things and working down from there. And look, a bunch of it is not legit. A bunch of it is redundant. A bunch of it is not from where it says it's from. And that makes this extremely hard work. But, you know, I try and sort of put aside a day and work through half a dozen incidents at a time. And, you know, consequently, there's tens of millions of accounts that have been loaded this week. So I'm going to keep sort of working through that. I think most of the really big stuff is in there already, certainly the stuff that's in the tens of millions. But hey, look, who knows what's going to happen tomorrow, right? So there's always something new. So that's that side of things. The other bit is I did my Security Sense column a few days ago. And this time I decided to sort of look at one of the things that's been in the news a bit, which is, depending on which headlines you read, Skype having been compromised and sending Baidu spam. Now, for those of you that don't know, Baidu is the Chinese Google. They're a massive, massive online site that is effectively their, I was going to say their internal version of Google, but it is available everywhere. But it is, as many of you probably know, China is blocked from accessing a lot of things on the external web, so they have their own internal versions of things that are also in Chinese language. As Baidu. Anyway, there's a bit tangential because what's actually happened here, and this is kind of the point of the column, is that people have been going through harvesting credentials from other breaches, such as LinkedIn. They've been using these breaches, they've been compromising Skype accounts, they've been using open redirects on Baidu to send spam. So imagine you've got a URL that you can pass another URL to, and then when you hit that first URL, it redirects you out. So this is something that we've known about for a long time. OWASP has it as number 10 in their top 10 web application security risks. Not particularly serious in many cases. It effectively exploits the trust that people have in the first URL, say the Baidu URL, to then bounce them onto somewhere else. Point of the whole post was that we're seeing all of this, these sort of incidents where one system gets breached and then the credentials are used to exploit other systems. And the point that I'm making in the Security Sense column is that when you collect user credentials, it doesn't matter how important your site is or what your site does, you are holding people's Gmail accounts, their Skype accounts in this case, their bank accounts, because of credential reuse. So there's something that sort of happens with the mindset when you start to go, well, this isn't just like a little forum for commenting on games or something like that. This is actually somewhere holding credentials. And the credentials are particularly sensitive. So have a read of that and sort of have a think in your mind about how that works. You know, have a think about the fact that they are really sensitive credentials that you're holding, regardless of how sensitive your site is. Yesterday, I finally got out a blog post that I had in draft in one way or another for years. Now, I've got a lot of stuff in draft, but I don't think I've had anything in draft for that long that I'd wanted to get out for that long. And this was observations around the cultural nuances of outsourcing, and particularly of offshoring. So yeah, outsourcing, obviously you get a vendor to do your development work. Offshoring, that vendor is somewhere in another country. And in my previous life, when I was working as an architect within Pfizer Pharmaceuticals and I looked after the Asia Pacific region, I spent most of my time somewhat under duress. This is probably a good sort of beers discussion, actually. Anyway, spent a lot of my time outsourcing work into India, China, and the Philippines. And basically everything that Pfizer built in Asia Pacific was outsourced to one of those three countries. And there was a huge amount of interesting things I saw. Obviously, in this post, I was really conscious that when you talk about cultures, it's very easy to offend people, and particularly when I'm talking about cultural traits. So I've tried to be as constructive and as balanced and as sensitive as I can reasonably be as well in talking about some of these nuances. But I talk a lot about things like, look, when we outsourced to India, there was a massive rate of churn. So you would see people there that were scrambling very quickly towards the top, and they'd jump from company to company to try and get a higher position, which is entirely understandable. But from a project continuity perspective, it meant that things were often disrupted. We go to China, and one of the big challenges we had in China was English literacy. You got a lot of smart people, but the English skills are very limited, and China being such an insular sort of place, they don't have a lot of exposure to English language in other places. So imagine what that does to code legibility. Talk about the Philippines, which was probably my pick in terms of the best of all worlds. Very, very friendly people, but also rapidly increasing in cost as well. And outsourcing to other countries sort of makes sense when there's this multiplier of, you know, Australia is like this expensive and the Philippines is that expensive. But as they get closer and closer and closer, because the Philippines is increasing in cost so quickly, wages are going up very rapidly, does it still make sense? So there's a heap of info in there. It's like a 6,500 word post or something like that. It seems to have been really well received. I haven't upset anyone yet, which is amazing. And I almost wonder if I was a little bit too conservative in places. But be that as it may, I'm glad that it is getting good feedback. And I am glad that I haven't upset people, because that's not the goal for something like this. We got these little parrots that are, they sort of flift around the palm trees eating stuff, and they want to let you know about it as well. They really want you to know. Anyway, they're gone, and it's better than some of the other creatures that could appear at any moment. So anyway, the cultural outsourcing thing, that's gone down really well. I'm really glad I got that out. That was also very sort of cathartic for me. There was a lot of itches there I wanted to scratch in terms of describing the things I'd seen. And obviously there are many things there which I wasn't real happy about. And I do outline those in I think fairly direct terms. So last thing that I wanted to touch on, and this is actually something that as of the time of recording, I haven't posted yet, but I will be posting today before I publish this video, and that is Capgemini and Michael Page. Now, a couple of weeks ago, you might remember there was this incident with the Red Cross blood service, and a bloke had got in touch with me, and he'd said, hey, I've got the Red Cross's database. And I sort of went, okay, it's, you know, did you SQL inject it? Like, what was the deal? And he's like, no, they just published it to a website. And it was a really big story down here, because it was people's personal data, and it was just a mess. Now, the same guy, literally as that Red Cross news was wrapping up, said, I got some more data for you. I've got Michael Page. Now, Michael Page is a global recruitment company, a big multinational company. And what this guy had found was backups of all their different global instances. There's the UK, there's the Netherlands, there's all these other places backed up as different backup files of the databases. So I've got a directory listing in there in the screenshot that he sent me, and it is literally like, here are all these .sql.gzip files that just represent the entire organization, tens of gigabytes worth of data. So it was sort of the same deal in that respect. And the problem, though, this is where it kind of got a bit interesting, is he said, Michael Page is Capgemini. Now, if you don't know who Capgemini is, Capgemini is a massive global consulting firm. So they have got, I think in the post I say, something like 180,000 people globally, well over 10 billion euros a year worth of revenue. They're a French-based company. They are huge. I believe they do a lot of outsourcing as well, so it might actually, or a lot of offshoring, might actually relate back to the previous post. Anyway, turns out that Capgemini have been the ones that have published all of this data, very inadvertently, to a publicly facing web server. Now, I knew about this almost 2 weeks ago, and I've been working since then through a contact at Capgemini to get this disclosed. It obviously has taken somewhat longer than the Red Cross. I think I'll probably talk about disclosure practices and timelines in a later post. In fact, I've got one in draft on that. It has taken them a while to get out there. As of the time of recording, I haven't seen any evidence that they've notified anyone. I have been in communication with them and said, look, I'm going to publish something. I said, I'm going to publish it Friday morning, UK time. So at the moment, that is the timeline that I am still working to. And also at the moment, no one else knows about it except for this recording, which you won't see until I publish it later on. Look, I guess what sort of strikes me here is that this is the same story over and over again. There is a huge amount of data that has been backed up and left on publicly facing drives. And there's not just one thing that goes wrong in order for that to happen. You've got to screw up a bunch of things. You've got to be taking backups and putting them on web servers. You've got to have directory listing enabled. You've got to have all sorts of processes that break down such that someone even has the ability to do that in the first place. And we see it happen over and over and over again. And if it's not Red Cross or Capgemini, it's any number of hundreds, probably thousands, of other sites that are doing this. There are Google Docs, which I won't put in the notes for the video, but there are Google Docs, little searches you can run on Google, that will find these for you. And there's an alarming number of them out there. It is just crazy. So have a read of that. You never quite know how much traction these posts are going to get, but that's the sort of thing which, to me, is a big news story, to have that much data from such a large organisation get exposed publicly. We'll see how that goes. It's probably the sort of week where other news is dominated, so I'm just glad to talk about something that's related to security and of a little bit more practical interest to me. So look, that's everything. Last thing, I've got Securi sponsoring my blog again this week. They were there last week too. So big thanks to those guys. The sponsors on there have been awesome. I'm filled out through to the middle of December and a little bit into Jan, so I'm trying to fill those remaining slots. So that would be great to get people into there. And look, thanks very much for watching. I hope this has been a nice little scene that maybe takes everyone's mind off other news they may not have wanted to watch quite as much as this. Thanks for watching.